Okay, February 2023. Welcome to Peas in a Podcast. Welcome, Trevor.
Yes, thank you very much, Michelle. And it's good to be here in this quiet house of yours.
Yes, it is a bit quieter, isn't it? Yeah, it's interesting. Like, kids have moved out, so it's a bit... Yeah, a little bit of a kind of wander from room to room going, oh, okay, here I am. Well, here I am, rattling around, but...
Clearer.
Yeah, bless them. Yeah, so 2023, we're going to talk about how you can use your garden to fix yourself.
Yeah, well, we did last time too, and we said we'd continue with how to make tinctures and salves and teas and so forth, so... I think that's our main objective.
Objective, yeah. Well, I've been practicing with a few things.
Yep.
I have. I've been making some different teas. And I actually, when I went through my bookshelf, I was quite impressed. I didn't realise I had quite so many books on natural healing and the garden and how the garden can help us. I mean, one fabulous book by a woman called Christine Iverson called The Garden Apothecary, which
is... Apothecary, that's the word I was looking for.
Apothecary, which is quite gorgeous. So if you look at your garden as if it's an apothecary, that's really quite delightful. So, I mean, we know eating fresh fruit and vegetables is really good for you. We all know that. We've been talking about that for a few years now, lots of our podcasts. Organic, we know that. But talking about using your garden as a medicine chest almost, with being mindful, of course, being really, really careful with what you are ingesting. So we're not suggesting that you race out there. Lots of my research indicates that you have to be quite mindful if you're pregnant. So things that are okay when you're not pregnant, aloe vera, for example, fantastic. The juice of aloe vera, like the gel of aloe vera, is a brilliant diuretic, but not when you're pregnant.
Well, they also warn that people do spray weeds, and we're going to be talking about weeds. So you must make sure that the source material is, well, organic and free from any sort of poisons and so forth.
Yeah, absolutely. So just grow your own where possible, or just have it from a friend's yard who you know doesn't...
Yeah, well, let it grow, actually. I'm amazed. I think I could actually start an apothecary garden.
I think you could, absolutely, yeah.
Stinging nettle is one of the best. The milk thistle is good. The marshmallow is good. The violet's good. The mustard's good. Chicory and yarrow are good. The calendula and marigold are good. So, you know, they're all things I can more or less go and pick without having to plant them.
Absolutely. Yarrow's an amazing one. But even stuff like I've been... So my daughter-in-law a few years ago, I was having trouble sleeping one night, and she said, oh, Mum, you need to get a bit of lavender, a bit of rosemary, steep it, and be a bit careful, steep it in the pot, let it steep during the day, warm it up.
Steep it in what?
Just what, hot water.
Okay.
Yep, so make a tea out of it.
Yep.
So basically when we talk about teas, we're talking about taking a herb and pouring boiling water over it and generally waiting for it to sort of seep for a while, and then you drink it hot. If you have it during the day, it's sort of like a... There's another word for it. God, I can't think of the other word for it. But there's another way you can have that where you can maybe sip on it during the day. But I certainly find that the lavender and rosemary tea, so I've been practicing a few things this month, and I've got plenty of lavender and rosemary, but be a bit careful because I did get a little bit overexcited. And as with most things, more is not better. So I made myself a beautiful pot of lavender and rosemary tea, and I always put a little bit of organic raw honey in there, just to sweeten it a little bit. And I kind of was like, yes, if a few bits of lavender and rosemary will make me tired, a giant handful of both of them will put me to sleep. And it was just, you know, it was undrinkable kind of thing. And you have to enjoy it. So the next night, for a pot of tea for one, I have a small teapot for one, I put three pieces of lavender, three lavender flowers. And then I put in probably a piece of rosemary that was maybe 2 centimetres long, just flicked it off, steeped it, and didn't let it sit too long. And it just has a slight flavour to it. And it is great. It does work. Absolutely works. Well,
I think they work all right. I mean, I was just watching a YouTube, lazy me, Small House Farm, it was called. It's an American bloke, but he's pretty comprehensive. And he quite rightly comes up with water infusion, you're brewing a herb. He suggests you don't boil the water, you just have it hot water. And he suggests that you the flavour's important, you know.
Yeah, you've got to enjoy it, otherwise you're going to drink it.
Well, the honey helps.
Yeah.
But you do need a steel sieve. You will need some sort of sieve to do this operation because you don't actually drink the herbs. You put them through a sieve and you just drink the water that's already taken up. And drying the herbs too, most of the people into this type of thing, of healing themselves with herbs, to put it out in the sun and dried it. So with stinging nettle, when you dry it, it loses its needles.
Yeah.
And most of them, they are dried. So in summertime or wintertime, whenever you're harvesting them, you can then make your tea or your concoction. It will last for a year or so, and so you'll then be able to use it out of season. And he suggests hot water to 3 to 5 minutes. And when you boil it, you can actually put the dried herbs in water and boil it. That is, you take it beyond the hot water stage, and that's called a decoction.
Ooh, fancy. Yeah. So is that like stronger?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I suppose, yeah, you'd have to be a bit careful though, wouldn't you? Because, you know, lavender and rosemary, they're fairly safe. Like, you know, we know that. Yeah. We're kind of familiar with that. But I know that some of the herbs, you do have to be careful with how much you ingest.
Yep.
And I guess I always think, try a little bit. Be mindful that it's going to feel a bit different, but just try a little bit.
Yep.
And then think about when you're putting things in your garden, what do you want from it?
Yeah, what are your particular illnesses? Do you have arthritis, or what are you going to use it for? But if you don't want to digest it, you can put the tea on a towel and put that on your arm or whatever place, and that's called a compress.
Yeah, and there's also like the poultice where you kind of mush it down and you might wrap it up in a bit of muslin.
Okay.
And put that on you as well, which is a bit more concentrated.
Poultice.
That's quite a nice way of comfrey poultices. I think we might have mentioned in the last podcast, were in the old days they were good for mending bones. Do not use them to mend your broken leg. However, they're quite good if you've got a bit of a bruise or something like that. They do make the area, but once again, make sure it's like your comfrey, put some water on it until it kind of is a bit of a mulch, you know, sort of a big mass.
Yeah.
Wrap it up in some muslin and just put it on you, and then just wait. Like, if you have a reaction, take it off. It's like with anything. Like ointment salves, which are an ointment, so there's lots of recipes. So you can, you know, the humble lavender, you can turn it into a tea. You can turn it into a salve where you might be putting it in a kind of an ointment.
Yep.
And you might have that in your, you know, some sort of base ointment or some base oil. One thing I did do with rosemary once a few years ago was I took some salt. I had some sea salt, coconut oil, probably. Yeah, I melted some coconut oil. And then I put rosemary and lemon juice, and I kind of mixed all that up in a bowl. And that was actually a scrub for when you came from the garden. And I would take this scrub and I would scrub my hands with it, because, of course, the lemon juice and the rosemary were really good if I had any of those tiny little cuts and things like that that you get in the garden. And the salt would be abrasive, so you get rid of the dirt, and the coconut oil would... So it's not, that's not quite a salve. It's a one way of kind of getting a particular herb kind of into the system in a way that's probably a little bit safer. Like I said, if you'd had a big reaction to it, my mum reacts quite badly to jasmine. Not that I'm aware of jasmine as a apothecary thing, but...
It's edible, isn't it? Jasmine rice and what have you.
Yeah. She can't even smell it without having a massive reaction.
Yeah, well, you do have to be careful, though, and everyone says so it's best to just try a little bit for a start. The actual tincture, which is one of the things, is an alcohol, and you can actually use... Well, if you can get it, you can actually distill your own ethanol. I have done that. Or you can buy vodka or brandy. Or you can also use vinegar if you don't have the budget and you don't have the need for quite so much strength or tastelessness. So
you just put it in there, in that as a base?
Well, the tincture is, once again, you get a glass jar, you put your dried herb in it, and then you cover it with alcohol.
Yeah.
And then you just poke it around a bit so it all gets mixed up, and you leave it there for 4 to 6 weeks.
Ah.
And it comes out coloured and very, very potent, because when you sieve it, you then tip all the moisture and you sieve it, and then you crush what's left in the sieve and get every bit of it.
Yeah.
And that's called a tincture.
But don't you just have like a teaspoon of that? Like, you don't drink all of it, is that right?
No, you don't drink
it. Yeah, you just have, like, maybe a teaspoon in water or something. Is that right?
Yeah. You have a drop at a time.
Yeah, don't... No, they don't have very much of that.
Yeah.
Which would be like, oh, I could give that a go. That would be really...
You have to take notes, though. All those things we're talking about, calendula or marigolds and stinging nettle, I mean, we're going to give you so much work, you'll never have time to sleep, you know. Because if you're running...
And if you're having trouble sleeping, rosemary and lavender is fabulous.
You should make notes because these things are expensive and have to be repeated. And the other thing is, a salve is that it's either an oil infusion where you use olive oil or something to infuse it instead of alcohol, or it's the tincture, the alcohol one, but a salve is when you add beeswax to it. Now, but what you do is, you know how you melt chocolate, you have a boiling pot of water and then you have your chocolate in a separate bowl that sits on top and not necessarily touching the water, but gets steamed. And well, that's how you do the salve. You put beeswax with the tincture or the oil infusion, and then the beeswax melt and you stir them together, and then it sets. So you get this, well, paste. I mean, it is, it's got a lot of names. It's called salve, basically, but it's also
lip balm.
Balm, yeah.
Oh, okay.
That's what I learned. But you, with those things, because they are, you can also buy a tiny little jar with a dripper in it. You know how you've got a plastic top?
Like with the rubber top, when you give the baby medicine and stuff like that. Oh, okay. And just use some of that. And I think it is some of that practice stuff. I mean, it's really interesting, like, kind of doing all my reading and stuff like that. Like, a lot of things are about calming the nervous system, which is like, okay, so we know working in the garden calms the nervous system. I just think it's really interesting that ingesting a lot of these things as well calms the nervous system. So you do have to be a little bit careful, like you said. You want to keep track of it as well, because sometimes it's like with homeopathy, if you don't use it properly, it can have the opposite effect, and you don't want to be sitting up at 3 o'clock in the morning hocked up on lavender and...
No, I mean, you want to... The infusion is really just the teas, and they have to be very safe because you don't want stuff inside you, but the salves and the tinctures and the poultices and the, you know, the ones you apply to your hands a drop at a time. I know a person who's very healthy but has got arthritis, you see. So I think I'll try and manufacture something with stinging nettle in it for her arthritis, because I don't understand why a healthy person has got it, actually.
Have
you got it?
Bad luck of the draw. I've got arthritis in my fingers.
Have you?
Yep.
Do you have stinging nettle? Do you have a weed stinging nettle with your bare fingers?
No, never. Only by accident. And then, then it's not pleasant for the neighbours. Yeah, no, only by accident. Oh, so stinging nettle is good for arthritis. Because mugwort's meant to be good. Is it mugwort's meant to be good for arthritis?
I'm not sure about that one, but stinging nettle. So, I mean, it could be that the injection of this poison from the needles is what? To save me from getting it. But you can get it when it's very young and very green, and that's what you use.
Yeah, don't use old stinging nettle for anything.
Well, you can, because the nettle, when you boil it or when you dry it, the needles disappear.
Yeah.
And it's actually one of the healthiest of all. The number of sort of vitamin Ks and vitamin Cs and manganese and all that.
Oh, and iron. I love stinging nettle. I'm a huge, huge fan of stinging nettle. But you know what else I'm a huge fan of, Trevor?
What's that?
Dinah talked to you about it, is the lemon verbena.
Ah, yes.
Which you got me addicted to. So many moons ago, going to your house for dinner, you made a fabulous pot of lemon verbena cordial.
Yeah.
Do you remember that? And I was like, oh, my God, this is fantastic.
Yeah.
Saw the lemon verbena bush and I was like, oh, that's brilliant. And you gave me a cutting.
Yeah.
And you said you might not be able to strike the cutting. So anyway, I thought, oh, well, got nothing to lose. Went home and I struck the cutting. Now, if you can get lemon verbena to grow, you have got yourself a fabulous plant. It's amazing, isn't it? Now, I've got one just here. We can look at it out the window.
Yeah.
I mean, what would it grow to? You can grow, I think, anything up to about 1.5 to 2 metres.
Yeah, it's a tree, actually. Yeah, I got a very thick trunk on mine, and you cut it back. Well, you showed me how to cut it back in wintertime.
And I cut it right back, and I remember one time wanting to move it because I wanted it sort of a bit closer to the back door, closer to where we sat outside because of the beautiful smell, like particularly the heat.
Yeah.
So I thought, oh, gosh, I think this thing's dead, and it's come back 1,000-fold. But when in my research, because I'm thinking, okay, lemon verbena cordial, what else can we do with lemon verbena? So lemon verbena is really, really good for gout. Not that I've ever had gout. It's also very good for trapped wind. But I don't ever break wind, so it won't matter for me. But other people who have that issue, it's actually really good for what you call trapped wind. But then I thought, well, then it would be quite good if, like, a younger baby with colic. But once again, just a few little drops, you'd want to be really careful. It's also used as, like, for colds and things like that, obviously, lemon verbena. So what I do with lemon verbena...
Yes.
So... Trevor, you have made this beautiful lemon verbena cordial that we had just before we started the podcast. It was just delicious. But I've got another lemon verbena and cucumber cordial that we'll have later.
Yeah.
And the other thing I use lemon verbena for is I grab a handful of it and I've got a little muslin bag, just like a very small one. It's no bigger than my hand. And I shove lemon verbena in it. I tie it really tight. And you hang it up in the car in front of the air vent you crush it. So as it dries, you just pop in the car, crush it, and then as the air vent's growing. But I also throw it in the washing machine. But they're green ones. So I throw this beautiful lemon verbena in the washing machine. It goes through the washing and it smells gorgeous, but it's actually really, you know, it's really, I think if it's on your clothes and you're, like in my case where I work where there are lots of people, I figure, you know, maybe it might help a little bit to stave off colds. Don't think it's a cure for COVID, but you never know. Nobody's tried it. But then I read a fabulous quote, and it was in the book, so I don't want to do any copyright. Christine Everson, she quoted it in her book, which basically said, lemon verbena is notoriously tricky to propagate, but it was once believed that, I quote, anyone who can make cuttings of lemon verbena grow will not die unmarried. And I was rather excited because I have never been married, Trevor. So there is hope for me yet if I can get this lemon verbena to grow. But I just had this little giggle because I just thought, isn't that interesting? And lemon verbena is meant to give you sweet dreams as well.
Uh-huh.
So this really prolific, very, very hardy...
Mm.
So, okay, you might not be able to get it from a cutting, but any nursery will have a lemon verbena.
Yeah, well, mine's a little bit bigger than yours, and the thing that makes you use it is the size of it. Because it's sitting in your garden, you think, and you do. It takes a fair while. You cut off great big branches, you get them down to little stems and little leaves, and you finally get something inside it, a muslin bag that...
It's got a really sweet flower on it, hasn't it?
Whenever you do that, the person who... comes into your kitchen thinks it's heaven's broken out, you know, because it really is the best smell in the garden. So it's a beautiful lemony smell.
Yeah.
And then the recipe I got soaks it in lime and lemon juice and pineapple juice and orange juice. So it soaks it overnight. You put it in the muslin bag and you press it down several times during the night and you put it in your fridge and overnight it does pick up that flavour that you found there. So you can also add lemon balm and mint to that particular thing. So if you've got lots of lemon balm, and I do, but I haven't pruned it. So it's best to keep lemon balm pruned, I'm afraid, because otherwise it goes to seed. And
mine's gone to seed, but I figure I'll just kind of go over it with the whippersnipper and then hopefully it'll come up nicely.
Well, yeah, you need to chop it right back because it is... well, it's actually almost as good as lemon verbena in its smell. It's that beautiful, fresh lemon smell.
It's not quite as strong as lemons, I find. I think that's the thing with all these, like, lemon verbena, lemon balm and stuff like that. It doesn't have quite that strongness of... Like, some people find the strength of an actual lemon a little bit much.
Yeah.
It seems to have a little bit more of a subtle flavour, a bit more of a subtle smell.
Okay, well, from this guy I was listening to, he also immerses things in oil.
Yes, I love immersing things in oil. What does he do?
Well, it gives you warnings as well. You need cold press. There are some oils that they extract using chemicals, so you need to be sure that it's cold pressed. You know, so you don't want those that use chemicals. But if you put it in olive oil, you just submerge it in the olive oil and you leave it for 4 to 6 weeks again. You can leave it, if your jar's airtight, you can leave it for years. And it's the same thing, you then need your stainless steel sieve and you just pour it out. Liquid only goes into the jar So you need a funnel and a strainer for all this. And that gives you, well, the same thing as you get, but cheaper with oil instead of with alcohol, you see.
Yeah.
And probably a bit more convincing than the teas and so forth. So the oil one's worth looking at too. It's the same sort of thing in that the oil will be highly infused.
Okay, yeah.
With the flavour of whatever it is you're using. And you can turn that into a salve the same way you can add beeswax to that in a pot of boiling water and or in a container that's been boiled by water. And when you add beeswax to these ones, what the big advantage is travel.
Yeah.
Because if it's a liquid, you get it spilled everywhere. But if it's a salve or a ointment or what was that, lip balm, if it's a balm, that depends on the amount of beeswax you put in it. But the beeswax will go solidified after it's been dissolved in the oil or alcohol mixture, and that will give you your, well, it's basically you can just apply it like an ointment on your skin.
Yeah. Yeah, and then like you can keep it in your bag or glove box of the car, just being a bit mindful. You still need the lid on tight because the oil will turn to liquid in the heat.
Yeah.
But then it'll go back again, which is probably a bit easier to transport and use long term.
Well, it is. You know, if you're just testing it for, say, for your arthritis, well, then it just sits there and you can just use a fingerful of a day or something like that to see if it's working.
Yeah.
Because I don't know if it actually works. I suspect it does because everyone seems to say it does.
And as long as it doesn't hurt, I think that's a really big part of it, you know. Mm. And I think all these things, I mean, I sometimes wonder whether people like you and I who are interested in the garden as an apothecary,
yeah,
we're already interested in eating healthy from the garden.
Yeah.
And I think that going hand in hand. So I imagine if you've had 5 beers and a pizza for dinner and then you suddenly go, oh, I might have my lavender tea. Your lavender tea is going to have to work a little bit harder than if you've had steamed fish and salad and maybe one glass of wine kind of thing and you're at 6 o'clock sort of thing. But look, I think there's a lot of credence in all these things. There's a huge amount of credence in them.
Well, it's also just in organic food generally.
Yeah, absolutely.
We'd have to say that, you know, the number of things that are herbs is probably greater than the number of things that are vegetables. I've got a book here called Vegetables, Herbs and Fruit. Well, believe me, there are more herbs than there are vegetables.
Yeah, exactly.
You know?
And herbs tend to be perennial, don't they, Trevor? So it's sort of kind of in a way a bit easier to sort of plant a whole bunch of herbs and then let them go, whereas, you know, your tomatoes you've got to look after each year. And
yeah, well, I got to page 190,
yeah,
with the vegetables.
Ooh, valerian.
And 390 with the herbs. So I mean, when you think of things like ginger and garlic and that, you are talking medicines, really.
Yeah, you are.
You?
yeah
straight
absolutely.
Away you're talking of blood clearance and recirculation and all these other things apart from the, you know, having sweet dreams and stuff. So the number of herbs are fantastic. I mean, we've mentioned just a few, but you think of parsley and basil and...
Oh, absolutely.
You know, bergamot and bergamot and lovage and... Wow.
Yeah, see, I didn't realise lovage was a herb, and I planted it thinking it was like a lettuce thing, and then I did a bit of, like, looking into it, and it's a herb. And I was like, oh, interesting. So you can actually eat quite huge amounts of certain herbs sort of thing.
Well, I mean... You know, we know coriander and dill and tarragon and all those. You can put them into your stomach all you like.
Yeah.
Although advisable really to check out a recipe first because you can spoil the taste with too much. But that, yeah, so just having a good organic garden is going to give you the ammunition to make these concoctions. But also, I also come to love weeds in my garden. I told you, I think, that the peas grew the best ever because they were completely surrounded in weeds, and the weeds really help the peas that have a very poor root system. And so I'm looking upon these things as letting them grow wild and treating it as polyculture, as companion planting, because we also know that when the roots go into the soil, the whole microcosm of soil life comes and feeds off the roots, no matter whether it's grasses or whether it's eggplant, you know, they sort of, they feed off a lot of it.
And the thing is too, it's around how different cultures, because I know purslane, our Greek friend, they eat that in Greece, you eat purslane, whereas here, people treat it as a wheat. And the other one is stinging nettle.
Yeah.
You know, in England and Ireland and all those places, that is definitely one of those things. So, yeah, and even like you're saying, with the weeds, I mean, I remember reading years ago, don't pull up your weeds unless you've actually got something to put into it. And I'm going to tell you, there is nothing, and I mean nothing, on this planet more utterly beautiful than a little child giving you a handful of sour sobs. Do you know what I mean? Like, nobody says to a small child who comes in with this big pile of yellow flowers, darling, that's a weed. So maybe we can talk a little bit more about weeds next month. I did want to mention an indigenous plant. As you know, I've been doing a bit of my gardening in my indigenous plant. My job these holidays was to sort of restructure and replant my Pondaria, which I'm very passionate about, and it's doing beautifully well. But I planted Nardoo, which is an aquatic plant. I'd actually kept it alive in the bucket for a very, very, very long time, but I've put it in the pond, and it can actually grow in the pond. So you put it in a pot in the pond, and I reckon it's tripled its size in the last 3 weeks. So it's actually a really lovely one to be putting.
It's floating on top.
Yep, and it's a lovely one to be putting in the pond because it looks really lovely. Nardoo, it's an indigenous plant mostly seen in Victoria, but it's actually quite prolific. My understanding is through some reading that it's quite prolific across most temperate areas. So it'll grow really well here in Adelaide. Be really mindful about how you eat it, though. Like, my understanding is Aboriginal people took the roots and then they sort of ground that down. So have a look into it. But I do know that someone had said, oh, no, you can grab a couple of Nardoo leaves and chuck them in a salad. But please research that before you get too ahead of yourself. But it's actually quite lovely. And while it's skimming on the top of the pond as well, it provides a lovely surface for the bees who can sit on it and drink the water. So it kind of attracts the bees, I don't think, as in they're particularly attracted to the Nardoo, but they're attracted to a space where they can sit and drink and not worry about not being able to climb out.
Yeah, it probably protects the water from evaporation too.
Yep. So I'm still waiting for mine to get a little bit more prolific, but I know certainly in the past it covered the whole thing, which was really gorgeous.
Yeah, well, we have missed out on the natives. Obviously, everyone talked about lemon myrtle, but there is quite a lot of natives that we've missed out on in all our talks. We probably need to build them up.
You know? Absolutely. But that'll fit in with all the conversations we're having about, you know, the use of the apothecary.
Yeah.
So next month, Trevor, what are we going to talk about? What are we going to experiment with?
Always find something. I mean, now we got weeds, we got cooking, we got apothecary, we got you know, vegetables that we're planting at present, natives that we're trying to learn about. We've actually got so much going on in the garden that that's actually how I feel about the garden. I walk in the garden and I see my next 12 jobs.
Yeah.
I'm actually extending my tomato trellises to 8 foot high and putting a 2 foot extension on them because the tomatoes are already up to the top.
My auntie, I love this story. My auntie, who's just recently gotten into vegetable gardening since she retired, and is just, I'm getting all these wonderful pictures, like she's sending me all these pictures of all this lovely produce. It's fantastic. And she was laughing because she planted some tomatoes. Her tomatoes have gone berserk, but she bought one of those little tripods, those little tomato tripods, and she said, I don't even know where it is. It's somewhere in the mass of, so her husband, who's out there now, he's had to build all these structures because that's not her cup of tea. But you kind of go out there, and I know that for a lot of people it feels like work, but you know, today I went out there for a couple of hours and I just kind of potted a bit, and you just immediately feel better.
Well, you do. It's also somewhat causing anxiety because I always see another dozen jobs, but I have over the years learned just to do one at a time, so it doesn't matter if you got a dozen, that just means it goes for 3 months, you know.
Yeah, you're never bored. Stay out of trouble.
And you do see something for your work. Like, I put corn in today, I put sunflowers in today, and so that sort of brings it to an end, you know. You've been checking out where you're going to put them, where the best soil is, where the irrigation is, what area is not planted, and how do you... I had to mow the alfalfa and use it for a mulch on the corn, and I had to do a lot of... There's never one job. Whenever you think of something, it's usually a staged job. You've got to do 3 or 4 stages before you finish it, you know.
Or even, like, sometimes I'll be like, I'm just going to go to the front to grab the hose, to bring it around the back, and then I'm like, oh, while I'm out the front, and then I'm like, oh, what was I doing? And, you know, and then I'm like, oh, hang on a minute, I wanted to go and do that. Yep. But that's delightful. The garden's pretty forgiving of us with all of that sort of stuff, isn't it?
I think if you allow yourself to... I do like the idea of... I mean, permaculture has swept the world, and it's an Australian idea. But the permaculture garden is not neat rows that are weed-free. It is things that have grown themselves and been allowed to grow. It is polyculture. It is using grasses as your companions and not worrying so much about rotation because the whole thing's on the move anyway.
Have you seen my rogue pumpkins out the side? We will go and look. And it's funny because my cousin, who's an engineer, her and her partner, during COVID, they discovered gardening.
Right.
And they discovered permaculture. But I do tease them because I go, when engineers garden, like they have perfect garden beds and everything's really structured. And so my auntie, we were there, and her garden's amazing. I can't rave enough about it. It's incredible. But my auntie said, oh, it's very neat and tidy, isn't it? I said, don't worry, Wilma, come and check my garden out. You'll feel so much better about yourself. But, yeah, I think that is the same thing, like, because the plant's growing there for a reason. I mean, I've given up on the fight to get rid of the grass, but I have planted a huge amount of native bushes and ground cover because where I've got the lavender, I don't have grass. So I'm like, right, well, let's just cover that area and just get the whippersnipper out and kind of take to it until eventually the ground cover will mostly get rid of the grass. And there's still going to be bits, but, you know, it's just to remind you that, you know, you're never going to control it, and who wants to anyway?
I think that's right. I think, you know, you can live within this sort of chaos and still thoroughly enjoy it and not be too critical of it.
No, I think that's the thing. Don't be too critical of it. What did someone say to me once? But there's not like there's proper paths. And I was like, oh, I guess he's not coming to the garden again. But anyway, we will see you next month for some more profoundness. And in the meantime, I'm going to find my next favourite herb and indigenous plant.
I might even find a flower still. We keep dropping the subject of flowers, but a lot of this stuff is flowers.
The calendula.
Marigolds.
Yeah, you've got to find about calendula and marigold because that can also be a fabulous dye for clothing.
Yeah, so there's a lot of things, the old calendula. All right, well, I'll see you next month.
Definitely, definitely. Thank you.